So now we are here today on this very special and auspicious occasion celebrating the Katina ceremony. And I can share with you for now, for starting the sermon, I would like to share with you the way that I am approaching it and how where I came from. Because I've been a Christian, rather Christian environment. My father, my mother are both quite faithful Christians. So they have certainly introduced me to the rituals and to the prayers and to the chantings and everything that Catholic Christianity had to offer and what they knew about it. So I don't know what other people know about it, how others do it, but they taught me something. So, and now I am here and now I'm seeing very different rituals and very different ceremonies and very different chantings. And in between now and then, there was a time where I was mostly quite aversive towards any of these things, where I didn't understand what's the point of any of that. What's the point of praying? What's the point of chanting? What's the point of doing something like donating? Sometimes what we do, very symbolic, right? Sometimes we don't understand what's even what is the practical point of doing so. For example, when last week we had the Dakineo, Panchani Sansa Puja here, and we had the German embassy here. I mean, there were some staff members from the German embassy were here, and there some among them were some who had no idea about what the Dhamma is, what we're doing here, even about the Buddhist culture, Sri Lankan culture. They were very limitedly exposed to it. So then they sit down with us in Dakineo, in the Dhamma hall, and there is this Buddha Puja. That means the women are bringing 108 dishes and offering to the Lord Buddha. And then one of them asked the question, what happens with that food after that? Because it's really well prepared. So much love and energy has gone into that food. Now, wouldn't it be a waste to throw it away? So that is the mindset that that person had. And the question he asked, and is a very valuable question, I think. So then we have to find an answer. And if I wouldn't have an answer, then it would bother me as well. But I have an answer. Therefore, I'm totally fine with it. I'm totally fine. I can understand the meaning of any of these things, but I didn't used to do that before. So, from a practical point of view, if nobody's eating this food, why are we offering this, and why we are cooking and wasting so much energy, and maybe the global climate and the planet will even heat up, and then we'll use so much resources. So makes no sense. But that is only concerned when we don't know about the mind, right? When we don't know about what merit is and what the power of the mind is, the power of how we can develop ourselves and how we can start thinking in certain ways and how we can even attract certain people around us. We can, just like Amadasana Swaminathan said last week, we are creating a world with every thought we are doing, with every attitude we are strengthening, with every attitude we are trying to let go of, or basically by not feeding it, we can direct our mind and therefore the whole world around us. Because there is this very famous saying, you are the five people that you spend most of your time with, right? So likewise, you can, from the five people around you, you can always know who you are. Because if they change, then it must mean that you also have changed. If you change, then also they will change. You can't have them change and you stay the same. Either they will change their attitudes and you will change it with them together, then you're still compatible. Otherwise, if they change their way of living or their attitudes or their views, then either you will start following them or you will no longer be there. They will no longer be your best friends and there will be other best friends. So that is the principle. This is again an expression of the fact that we are creating our world or the world around us. I mean, this statement that we are the creator of our world is very, very profound. When you start understanding the Dhamma, the more you understand it, the more you will understand that statement. We are the creator of our world. Nowadays, Guru Hamdru and sometimes also Amalasana Swaminathan is explaining about colors, and colors is not in doubt. So it's actually created by our mind. So what you see now is not someone outside. The colors and everything you're perceiving here is created in your mind. It is your world only. It's not the world itself. Right? But we'll not go there now. I'm just trying to give you some sort of an idea that this Dhamma is, or this philosophy is very deep, and it can be viewed as a very simple statement. When I say you are the five people that you spend most of your time with, and that is just the beginning. And when I say what you give is what you get, then that is just the beginning of a very profound truth that we are all starting to understand day by day. And which, when we make use of it, when we apply it in our lives, will totally, totally change us. So I was listening to last week's sermon by Amalasana Swaminathan yesterday, and these first 45 minutes where he's explaining about how if we change ourselves, then the whole world will change. I mean, this is not very complicated. This is not rocket science. I think we can all understand this, right? The only thing we have to do is we have to apply this. And that is something even so far away from a religion. Even when I have friends who are Christians or who are not even having any religion, if you sit down with them and they explain you their problem, if you use this principle, you can give them an advice. And this advice will most certainly work if you can use that principle properly, right? Let's say somebody is feeling cannot come to rest. He's always nervous. He's always running in his mind, restless. Now, how can we apply this principle? What he's lacking is peace or rest or calmness or something like that. So then if he's lacking that, what has he not given? He hasn't given that. Therefore, we don't need to explain someone the Dhamma, especially if maybe that person might not like us to explain that. But we can explain him that. I can explain this to my mother or my father and they will accept it. And I can nail them down on the Bible and say, look, this is not a Buddhist principle. This is, you can find it everywhere. Jesus also said, you get what you have given. So therefore, if this is your problem, why don't you try to solve it in this way? Instead of trying to grasp and run after what you think you need. When we are lonely, what we usually do is we try to find someone to be with us. And that might work for one time, but nevertheless, if people have the feeling that we are just wanting to be with them so that we don't have to be alone, they don't like us for that. People want to feel that we care about them, not that we do it just because then we don't have a problem, that we are not lonely. So if somebody has to be with others so that he doesn't suffer, then that is not something that others really appreciate. That's why, on the other hand, he can be with others, but he doesn't need to be with them. And therefore, he's there for them, not for himself. Okay. So again, this principle will always give us the right answers. And when we are practicing the Dhamma, all we do is we get a better understanding of this very same principle. That is something we should all try to understand. So now I forgot to talk about the point that I was trying to say before about the rituals. So now the question was, what is the point in offering these dishes? Or even what is the point of what we are doing here today? Maybe some of you have that question. Maybe some of you don't, you simply have never been in this culture, have not, don't know much about the philosophy, so it's natural to have this question. Now, I want to tell you what I'm doing, what I feel now. For me, all of these things are simply a worshipping of the truth. That means, I mean, the truth is simply the truth. The truth is universal. The truth is what can heal us. The truth is what sets us free. The truth is something that all unites us. So therefore, I am worship. When somebody asks me the question, why do you bow down in front of the Buddha? Because some people know that I have been a scientist in my previous years. So then they find it hard to understand how I can do such a thing, right? So my explanation is, for me, there are two parts. One is, I am worshiping the truth. When I was a scientist, I was doing it in one way. I was also following and trying to understand the truth. I mean, when I was a physicist, I wanted to really know about the nature and how it works and who we are and how to be happy, all these things. Now I'm still doing that. But the truth that I have found now is just, I mean, I've gotten closer to the real truth than I was before. So when I worship the truth, then I just dedicate my life to the truth. And whatever is true and whatever is uniting us, whatever is healing us, that is what I will follow. I don't follow anything else than that. I'm here because of my teachers, and to the best of what I know, they are speaking the truth. I haven't found anything better, and it works for me. Therefore, I'm not, when I'm worshiping the Buddha, I'm worshiping that truth, the truth itself. I don't even know who discovered it. Maybe it could be that it wasn't the Buddha who discovered these four noble truths. We can't be sure, because it's history. We just know what has been passed down to us. But if we make this determination, if we do it for that reason, then we will only gain, because our mind will slowly and slowly live and come closer to the truth. So then there are other aspects. For example, when we are doing these things in our conventional world, in this culture, people are used to certain views and certain ways of looking at the situation. That means, for example, when I bow down in front of the Buddha, I need to be mindful of what other people will think around me, what message I am sending out to the world. So if they see me bowing down, and I'm doing it with such a profound gratitude in my mind, they will feel that. So here, today, and in this ceremony, when you walk around, it is one thing to see what people are doing, whether they are sawing a rope or whether they're offering it. But apart from that, you will feel a certain energy, certain atmosphere, a certain feeling of happiness and lightheartedness of everyone. Everyone is really pleasant and happy, and they are full of loving kindness towards each other, and actually towards not only us, but towards the whole world. That is what we can understand when we practice the Dhamma, right? So this makes it special, how we do it, and these intentions make all these things special. And therefore, if I, now that I have understood the Dhamma to a certain extent, and I have seen how it heals me, I have a very profound gratitude towards the Buddha. And when I'm expressing that, first of all, I am cultivating this sort of gratefulness. That means I am aware of the fact that I am standing at his feet. I am fully dependent on him. I wouldn't be anything today if it wouldn't be for that teaching. I would still be doing the things I have done 10 years ago. Maybe directing people in the wrong way, directing people to a way where I thought happiness was, but it actually wasn't. But now I'm able to have a much different life, and I have a much, I have this, what I just explained at the beginning. I can be someone who can make a difference in this world. So we all can make a difference in this world. Sometimes there might be small things that you can do that will give another person the chance to do something bigger. So, for example, in our monastery, some of the Anagarikas, they are washing the robes of some of the monks. And when they do so, the monk has 1 hour of time that he doesn't have to go and wash his robe, but he can go and maybe teach the Dhamma to someone. So if we are mindful of when we do that, when we are the one who are washing the robe and we are realizing that we are just giving someone a chance, we are giving someone who is someone who has wisdom to help others. And if we rejoice in that, then we are gaining a lot of merits and we are becoming more and more acquiring of that very same wisdom. So to answer the question, why do we do this? Now you're here and there are many others here. So try to think of yourself as being one of everyone. That means just part of the family. And therefore try to give that vibration to the others as well. Then you will feel carried and united with everyone. And there you feel a lot of energy and pleasantness, and you will feel this sense of this mission on which we are on. You will feel it stronger and stronger, and it will carry you forward. So when I came here one year ago, many things were strange to me. That means some cultural things and how to live here. Sometimes it was very different from Germany. I felt different at that time. I felt sometimes this is not right this in this way. Okay, this was what I felt sometimes. But what we feel doesn't have to be true. What we understand might be one thing, but what we feel might be another thing, right? So this is important. When you understand the Dhamma, when you understand about yourself, then sometimes you have feelings, but you know that this is just a feeling and therefore it's a manifestation. So that means if we have practiced a certain attitude, certain virtues or certain habits, I wouldn't say virtues, if we have practiced certain habits, as for example, the habit of jati, the habit of gathering things to ourselves and trying to fulfill ourselves. If we have all practiced that, right, for many years. Now it's natural that we will start feeling anger, sometimes envy, sometimes impatience, many emotions we might feel. But when you understand the Dhamma, then you can know that, okay, I can put the right causes into this system so that I can start feeling in a different way. I can change myself to what I want to be. I don't have to feel this forever. And this is the great power of the Dhamma. So, honestly, when I came here, it was because of the Dhamma. It was because I found that truth in the Dhamma. But being in here, I wouldn't say that I felt home from the very beginning. It was something that I had to start making it. We have the power to make something our home when we understand the value in it. And of course, many people will help us. So I can't say how many people and how many incredible ways have tried to help me and make this my home. And now, 1 year later, a little bit more, 1.5 years later, it's a very different feeling. Now I'm feeling it as my home, not only wanting to be here at home, but I can actually feel so comfortable. So in the same way, let us all make the most out of today and out of the time we have left on this, in this life, and empower ourselves and empower each other to make the most out of it. And there will be people who see us and they will feel how we do it is so pure, is so kind, full of kindness, and they will join us, right? So why I'm bowing down to the Lord Buddha is also because the signal it sends out to others, the way other people read it, and then I'm doing that for them. The act in itself, conventionally, we in a conventional world, it has a meaning, but in the three-dimensional world, you can question why, what's the point of bowing down, right? You can do that. But if you have compassion, then you know that it's very important to do that. And all the things we are doing in here, all the rituals, if you engage in them with this understanding of worshiping the truth and how it develops your attitude and how you can create an atmosphere which others will feel so pleasant, then you are acting out of compassion. So that's the point that I'm trying to say. Now, I would like to talk a little bit about the Dhamma. And I will not go incredibly deep, like Amanasana Swaminathan went with you last week, but I will just share a little bit. When I think about why I became a monk, I mean, you all understand that changing your life and becoming a monk, joining Mahasangha, it is not an easy thing to do, in the sense of simply the way we have lived our lives, what we have been used to do, and the way we have, how our daily life looks like. It's a very different way of living. It takes some time to get used to it. So why have and sometimes there are obstacles, right? When you read the Dhammapada, you will find the Buddha says, Yo saha sang saha sena sangame manuse jine ekancha jaya attanang save sangama juttamo. So that means somebody who is able to win against himself, he's more brave, he's more courageous, he is stronger than even someone who can win 1,000 battles against anyone else. So doesn't he say that it is somehow very difficult? I mean, it is easier to win 1,000 battles than it is to win against yourself. So it can't be something easy, right? So then why have I still done it? Why am I still on that journey? It is simply for the fact that if you ask yourself, what is the alternative? Then you cannot give an answer to that. Once you start understanding this philosophy, you can't find any answer to what else even is an option for you. So I'm not talking about the fact that you have to go into ropes. Okay. Some of you might not, out of certain obligations and duties, have that chance in this life. But I'm talking about this practicing of this path mentally. Is there an option to that? Once you understand, then when you ask yourself, so we all want to be happy, right? Now, how can we find happiness? Normally, we have many answers. But when you come to the Dhamma, you will find that all the answers you thought were true were actually all wrong. They were never the real path. They would have never given us what we were looking for. So then there is only one choice. There's only one way to be happy. But in the normal life, in mundane, in our normal society, people always tell us there are many ways to be happy. You can become an engineer. You can become a doctor. You can become a lawyer. You can become an artist. So there are many ways. But when you understand this, And you ask yourself, how should I live my life so that I will be happy in the long term? If I ask myself this question, I have only an answer. This path is the answer. So that's why no matter how difficult it is, how many challenges there will be, I can't change it. I have to do it. I can't. If there would be an easier way, I would do that. But since there is not, then I need to go there. I need to go through this. And that's what motivates me, what keeps me here. And I really never wanted to become a monk just like that. It was always my wanting to understand the truth that it was there. And when that happened, at some point I felt like, yes, then this seems to be the best way to practice this path for me. So then I'll do it. This is what we need to understand. The Dhamma will help us understand that happiness can only be found in one way. This is what we're talking about in every sermon. This is what we need to understand. We all want to be happy. Now, how can we achieve that? Can you understand what I'm trying to say? Now, let us think about why we are not happy yet. What is it that keeps us from happiness? If we think about it, there will be many reasons for many people. Some people will say, because I still want to travel the world. Some people will say, because I still want to have a family. Because I still want to succeed in this job and get this award, or because I want to express myself and become a certain individual. Maybe I want to become an artist. Maybe. However, whenever we look at it, we always feel some sort of incompleteness, some sort of lack within us. Don't we all feel that? That is what we all feel in different ways. And we call it vexation, right? So we need to understand that there's some feeling which comes up regularly, repeatedly, which makes us feel that something is missing in our lives. We are not complete. We need something to complete ourselves. And then what we do in our lives is usually we go about trying to complete that. For example, if there is a girl or a boy, when he comes into the teenage years, and what people around him tell him is like, you should, I can only talk about Germany, I don't know how exactly it happens here, but I guess it will be very similar. Or when you're approaching the 20s and mid-20s, and you don't have a partner, then sometimes people will ask, why don't you find someone? Right? So people always give us this view that the reason why you're not happy, or you are not complete the way you are. To complete yourself, there's something that you need to add, right? If you are a man, just a man, 20-year-old, 25-year-old, there's something missing. That can't be a happy life. So you need to put a woman next to him, and then it becomes a complete thing. But man without woman, that's not complete. And the other way around as well. And the same happens in our teenage years. Then also they tell us, or we learn, to be complete, I need something. And once we believe it, we feel it. And the funny thing is, once we achieve whatever we are looking for, we also think that now we are complete. So it's a trap. It's a very delicate trap. A 10-year-old girl or a 10-year-old boy, he doesn't feel that something is missing, right? But once you tell him you need to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, a few years later, suddenly he feels he's no longer perfect the way he is, just because he started to believe in this view. So we always think, and I always thought in my life, that being alone or not having someone else in my life, that is why that is not complete. In living alone is not a complete life. So therefore, if I find someone, then I can be complete. So I really always felt that the imperfection is real. It's out there. A man who is not, a man who doesn't have a partner, or a woman who is not married and she's 30 years old, it is inherently not complete. But what the Buddha explains us is that, no, that is not true. The incompleteness is something you feel, but it's not actually there, right? So it's only when you believe that you need something, you feel that you're not complete. But actually, nature is always complete. Nature is always perfect. That is what we can start understanding when we understand the Dhamma. And then we understand that we understand life in a very different way. Let's imagine a girl, let's say 18 years old, and she's looking herself in the mirror. Now she will feel, oh, my puberty is there and I have pimples here. So what she will feel is, I'm not complete the way I am. Then how should I go about living a happy life? Well, I should get some way to change my bodily appearance. I should try to get maybe some makeup, so girls start doing their makeup. For boys, it might be that they feel that, oh, I'm just one of many. I'm neither very smart, nor very strong, nor very cool. So there should be some way I can stand out of the crowd. So he also feels some sort of lack, right? It might not be so much about the body, but nowadays it becomes more and more in society, becomes more and more only about the body, right? And about appearances, very superficial. But sometimes for men, it's more like they, by being smart, they can feel that they're complete, then they have something. So, and then when we feel this incompleteness, when we look ourselves into the mirror, then we start doing something. We go to the shop and we buy some makeup. Or we go to the university and we acquire a degree. Or for me, for example, when I was in my master's degree, after my university times, I felt, okay, I should travel around the world. Then I'm complete. Then I am sort of free from this inherent lack which I have within me. Let's take the example of the girl who's watching herself in the mirror. When she sees the pimple in her face, doesn't she feel that what she sees is an ugly thing? The face she sees is ugly? The outside side, the outside view, her face is an ugly face, right? That's what she feels. So therefore she really believes beauty and ugliness are things which are actually out there. But what has the Buddha taught us? It's not, beauty is not out there. Beauty is not in the object. So then how do we have to look like, how do we have to look like to be beautiful? We can't. We can't do it. Is there someone who's ugly? No. But what is there is the feeling of someone is ugly is there. We all feel this person is ugly. We feel this person is beautiful. That's a feeling, okay. But that doesn't mean that that person is actually ugly or beautiful. So nature itself is totally equal, right? There's no good way to look or bad way to look. So if we can connect to that nature and perceive the world according to that nature, then we don't have a problem. we don't have a problem in the first place because nature is already perfect. There's no ugliness to fix, right? So then why do we try to fix it? Why do we try to put makeup to fix something which is not really imperfect in the first place? If we start thinking in this way, then the peace will come, happiness will come. So this is the first step into the Dhamma, understanding that beauty and ugliness is only a perception which is created within us based on views that we have adopted because of opinions and because of not understanding our mind. Other than that, the outside world is totally perfect. So when somebody tells us, this is something that is beautiful, and this way you can be beautiful and you can be appreciated by others and you can stand out or you can find your happiness, then the wanting for it will start, right? And when the wanting for it will start, we'll go about trying to find it, and all this wanting will create our internal furnace, our internal fires, and this feeling of not being happy. This feeling of not being happy, this is something really, we really need to get to understand very clearly. Amarasana Swami Narayana has explained to you in his sermons that the happiness we feel, let's take the example, we have a pimple in our face, now we go to the shop and we buy some makeup and then we apply it to our face. Don't we feel happy when we see ourselves made up, when we see our face being properly designed or properly adjusted? We feel happiness. Is it because that experience gives us this happiness? Is it the face which is now beautiful and it makes us feel happy? No, it is not true. Because it is only the relief of the vexation, right? When you want something, when there's a vexation and you get it, that means you get whatever the mind is searching for. And if that is, if we have learned from Instagram and social media generally, this is what is beautiful and we run after it, then the running after it will cause our pain, our vexation. Now, when we get it, we no longer have to look for it, because the looking, the searching for it is so hard, so exhausting. So when we stop searching, all our internal fire starts to cool down. And that is what we feel as happiness. There's nothing about that outside experience which has ever given us anything. It can't. It's just an experience. It's just a sight. When you can understand it like this, then you will fall out of love with the world. You will find peace with the world. You will find peace with yourself. Right? With the way you look like, with whether you're smart or not. Because can smartness make us happy? Being smart? When we are smart, we can earn a lot of money, right? So now we can earn a lot of money. Of course, when we are not smart, we can't earn money. When we are strong, we can't lift bricks. Okay, that's true. But what has bricks and what has money to do with happiness? Money is money. I mean, this is just paper, or this is just a number on a display. Or what you can do is you can change that paper with some stuff, and then you can put it next to you. But stuff is just stuff, not beautiful stuff. But we always buy it and we always import it because we want beautiful stuff. Right? But once you understand that there's no beautiful stuff, there's only stuff, then it's okay, however it is. It can be this, can be something else. It will both be okay. So these are like the basics of the Dhamma, which already have the power within them to make us understand that I don't need to be smart to be happy. I don't need to be what we call beautiful to be happy. That means whatever people tell us about happiness. I don't need to be young. I don't not need to be strong. I don't need to be whatever. Nothing like that. The reason why I'm not happy is because I think I need to be something. And if I can understand that whatever is there is already good the way it is, no, I don't need to change anything. And happiness is already there. Some of us can do arts really well. And some of us can't draw very nicely. Now, if I start to think that that's an inherent, I mean, that's, I'm now disadvantaged and something is wrong with me, something is imperfect with me, then I go on a rat race. But I can still do whatever best I can do with what I have. And then I can be happy. So now let's take a situation in our lives when we are feeling a problem. And I want to give you a way to solve that problem. Very simple strategy to solve a problem in your lives when you are not complete. So, and I already gave you some contemplation right now, very simple ones. But I want to explain another point. Maybe some of you have that problem. When, let's say that there's a vexation within us. Let's say there's a chocolate that we want. When we are talking about vexation, we always feel vexation is a fixed entity. You know, in the sermons in Rajagira, we talk about these concepts like entities and what jati is and how we feel a world of fixedness. So what am I talking about when I'm talking about fixedness? That means, for example, when we have a relationship, we are in a relationship and then let's say yesterday I was in a relationship and then that person broke up with me. How do we feel? Then when that happens, we feel sad. And then we feel sad for a while. And then today I wake up in the morning and I still feel sad. So if I ask you or if I ask myself, why am I sad today? Then I feel that it's because what happened yesterday, right? So what happened? Yesterday something happened and today within me there's a unhappiness caused from yesterday's situation, right? So that means something happened in the past and it has created unhappiness within me, right? But when you understand the Dhamma, the cause and effect principle, I'm not talking about the cause and effect principle of science. So I'll explain you that part shortly. This is cause and effect in science. In science, in biology, in physics, in maths, in normally we learn this. So a very simple example to this is a baby. And this example has been given to you by Amarasana Swami Nahansa already in the sermons. A baby is an effect. Can a baby come without parents? It can't come, right? But if the parents die, will something happen to the baby or to the newborn human? Nothing will happen to that, right? So that means That means this effect, this baby is independent of the, once it's been created, it no longer needs the parents, right? Once the baby is alive, once the new human is there, it doesn't need any parents or anything else to keep it alive. It's just there, right? That is what we feel in, that what science tells us. Or this is the cause and effect principle, which applies over time. Time means a cause in the past creates an effect in the next moment or in the future, like this. But what the Buddha, the cause and effect, the principle of the Buddha is different. This is the one that he explains. So there we don't have a right direction to the right, we have something like this. So an effect can only manifest as long as the appropriate causes are there, right? It is a manifestation of the causes itself. Let's take a simple example of a fire. Can you have a fire without, if fire is something like this, then what you can do is, you take the wood out, you take the wood, you take the oxygen, and you take the heat, you take all of them away, but you keep the fire there. And then you do another fire on another place, right? Can you do that? You can't. Or take another example of a shadow. If a shadow is now there, like a baby, then you could take the object, you could take the light, you could take the tape. I mean, there's a shadow in here behind this flower decoration. Now I could take that object, I could take the light and make another shadow somewhere else, and then I would have two shadows. But that does not work, because it's like this. Okay, can you understand the difference? Yeah, this is a crucial change of mind that we have to go through. And if you can understand this, then we can actually solve our problems very easily. Now, let's talk about a situation when we are in a problem. For example, I want chocolate. A very simple example. Or there's a vexation, a feeling of unsatisfaction within us. Or no, let's better take this example that I've already given. Somebody has broken up with us and we are sad. Okay? Let's take this example. Normally we feel she broke up with me and now sadness is there, right? So then what do I have to do to get out of this sadness? Well, I have to get rid of it. I have to enjoy myself. Maybe I have to go and watch a movie. I have to meet a friend. I have to go and have a walk. Or I have to find another girlfriend or someone else or meet some friends. So that's what we do to get rid of this. So we really try to destroy it, get rid of it from ourselves so that we are able to be happy again. This is what we normally do. We feel we are not complete and now we are run after something to be complete again. But what the Buddha explained is, look at what is the sadness I feel today. Is it because of what happened yesterday? It is not actually. The reason why I'm sad today is not because of what happened yesterday. It's because of the way I'm thinking right now. The way I'm thinking right now. So therefore, if I start thinking in another way now, problem is gone, right? So what is the cause of vexation? Do we remember what we have learned in our sermons? What is the cause of this vexation that we feel? Wanting. So therefore, it's like this. As long as there is a wanting, a feeling of vexation will be there. But wanting is not something that can create a vexation, right? It's not like wanting happened and now you have a vexation within you and you have to run with it and it's like a stone on your shoulder and you have to find a way to get rid of it. No. This is still there. It's a process. It keeps manifesting instances of this feeling of a problem, right? It's like this. It's like a fire. So therefore, the only thing you have to get rid of is this. You don't need to, and you can't get rid of this. You can't solve your problem by going and having a walk. You can't solve your problem by finding another girlfriend, partner, or meeting your friends. These will never really solve your problems. It feels like it solves your problems, but after some time, problem will always come back, right? So, actually, the only thing we have to do to get rid of this is to see that below here, we have ignorance. Ignorance might tell us, for example, being with that person was so nice and she gave me a lot of happiness. Right? As long as we believe this, we are in ignorance because that person can't give happiness. Only when you believe happiness is in there, you will want it. So the moment that you start reflecting on the fact that happiness is not there, what you have experienced was the relief of vexation, then the moment you are aware of this, this is gone. Right? This is gone. It's like a ghost. When you look at what's really there, what's really going on, as long as you think happiness is out there, beauty is out there, or entities are there, this will always manifest. But the moment that you really know what's really there, that is gone. So we don't need to treat this. So we need to understand this vexation and all these things as in this light, in the light of cause and effect. That is the point I wanted to share with you, because then you can begin to feel this healing power of the Dhamma within you. Then you know that the mind is actually, we are actually inherently happy. We just need to start thinking, see the world as it really is. We don't need to do so much effort to be happy, right? So I don't know whether it made sense to all of you, but I try to explain you a little difference between what scientists call as cause and effect and what we call here as cause and effect, and a little about simple ways to get rid of the problems in our lives. There are many ways we can contemplate, but I find that this is a very simple way for the beginning, and we can contemplate, of course, in many other ways. Now, maybe there is someone who has a question. We have still 15 minutes. You want to ask a question, not necessarily about the Dhamma, but we can also or your question about this, or you know, in science, when we learn about you might have heard about the theory of evolution. In science, in the theory of evolution, most of the people in the West, they think that this theory is true. And for example, we are all inherently selfish. We can't change it because it's in our DNA, right? So we think that the DNA is what's working within us and we can't get out of this. And therefore, there's no way to be happy. My friends, my family, my brothers, my brother and sister, they believe that. Scientists talk about how our DNA is trying always to multiply itself and grow. But when you understand about cause and effect, when you understand that there's no entities here, then you will not have any problems. Even the problem, for example, what happens after this life? Let's say, is there a birth after this life or not? Is there a life after this or not? How can we really know that? We really can't know exactly. But when you understand about these, about cause and effect and the fact that there are no fixed entities, then does it make sense to say that I am, that it is going to be me who's having another life? It's not right. We don't even feel that some things are happening to me. Things are just happening in nature. And when things are happening, how can we ask ourselves what's going to happen with me? That makes no sense. Therefore, this understanding, when we have it in the, if we have that mindfulness, then we don't need to go into asking so many questions that we are usually struggling with, whether it's about life after death, whether it's about whether biology is right or wrong, what about DNAs and so on. All of these things don't matter because they're always talking about a fixed entity. Recently, I was in the rehabilitation center that we are building right now, or that we have just finished. And then we had, we were decorating this rehabilitation center. And there we are using some bonsai trees. I don't know. Do you know what is a bonsai tree? Bonsai tree is like a small version of a big tree. If you plant that seed and you cut the leaves in a certain way or the tree trunks in a certain way, you can make it stay. You can make it be like a puppy version or a small version of the big tree. So when I was seeing that, I was reminded of something that people told me in Germany. There were some of my friends told me, you know, when you do that with a tree, when you try to make it into a bonsai tree, what happens is something in the tree will excrete some sort of chemicals. And then if you analyze these chemicals, it's like the same as the chemicals which are released in a human when he feels pain, or in an animal when he feels pain. So that people, he or she tried to convince me that when you do something like this to a tree, he will feel pain. So this tree is actually suffering. This tree, you are trying to control this tree, and this tree doesn't really like that. So you're harming the tree. This is what I was reminded of. But let's take this simple example. So this is the tree. You have some roots, you have a stem, and you have some trunks, and you have some leaves. If you look at it with the lens of biology, you will know that the only thing that you have here are some cells or some electrons, some atoms. That's all there is. So therefore, there's not actually really a tree here which wants to grow. These are just a collection of things, a collection of parts, leaves. The leaves don't, I mean, the atoms which are here, they don't really know that they are meant to grow in a certain way. They are just doing what they're meant to do, or they're just doing what they are doing. So therefore, you can't, when we feel that this tree, it likes to grow a lot, this is only a story in our mind. Story in our mind, and then we feel like this tree is being tortured, but actually there's just a bunch of electrons, a bunch of, I don't know, atoms, cells. And none of these cells are being tortured, right? These cells are all perfectly fine. So this is just another example of how our mind creates a hallucination. And when, as long as you live in this hallucination, you will feel that there is a tree and something happens to the tree, and there's me, something happens to me, and I am, and sadness is there, and now I need to get rid of it. But when we can practice this understanding, cause and effect, then we will no longer feel that. We will no longer be able to feel that I am there to be unhappy. Right? There is only a manifestation, a mind. What we can draw is this. So this is enough of the Dhamma, I think. These are just some ideas to think about. So the outside world. So we have another 8 minutes. So I think then let's stop the sermon for today and share the merits. And then I can release you at 10:30 on time to join to the Buddha Puja that we're going to have now. And after that, there will be the Dana. And after that, there will be the offering of the robe. So I hope that you can all be there and you can either be part of it. But if you can't be part of it, if you can simply observe it and rejoice in the people who are doing it, you really don't need to take part in it, as long as you can see how much goodness is being created by whoever is doing this thing. So the intention is to, as I said, to worship the qualities of, traditionally this monk is given to the monks when they have practiced the rains retreat. That means when they have contemplated on the truth and when they have practiced the path. And therefore, it is an embodiment of the truth. And therefore, when you give this, this robe is just a homage to the truth in that way. So, and therefore, you can think about it like this and acquire a lot of merits. And you can be happy about the people who are doing it as well. And then it will take you one step closer. Okay, so let us share our merits together. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas, and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha, and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives towards the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Nohanse and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Nagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits we have acquired to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, ropes, and medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. Made through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to chant the merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of these merits, they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our families and friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in every way they could. Let us transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been family and friends to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, they redeem themselves and be born in a blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us all resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we've acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arhats on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped to make this program a success, become arhat nohanse and arhat meni nohanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.